Hi, good morning, everyone. Welcome. This is our research roundtable for Wednesday, February 8th, 2023. And I'm super excited, guys, because as I said in my email, who we have on today is our own Data Jeff. Jeff Young is here. And if you don't know Jeff, he's our data analyst extraordinaire here at Cause of America. I guess I can't talk about that yet till we do the press release. Okay, well, anyway, there's big news coming out hopefully this week. But I don't think that's what Jeff is talking about today. But I know how you guys love the technical topics. And Colonel Sean Smith's here, and he's given us a bunch of very in-depth topics. But this time, Jeff is here to talk about voter rolls, phantom voters, NCOA, right? Other stuff. He has a great presentation that he put together. And when he shared it with me, I said, could you please come present that to our research roundtable? Because I really think they would love it. So without further ado, take it away, Jeff.
All right. Thanks, Amy. Hope I can live up to that introduction. So I'm going to take you guys through an analysis I did for Colorado. And it's the reason I want to show this is because it gives you an idea of how you can do analysis on your own state's voter rolls for your county, for your district, whatever. But what I hope you take away from this are steps and ideas that you can do on your own and present to folks to get them aware in your own communities. So with that, I am going to share my screen here, and Amy, can everybody see my screen?
Okay? Yes, that's perfect.
Okay. All right. So I took voter rolls, and in particular, this is the county I live in. So Arapahoe County, Colorado is where I live. So what I wanted to do is to go through what does our central database look like? And in Colorado, it's called SCORE. But most states are going to operate very similar to Colorado. There's some onesie twosies that may have slightly different information flows, but for the most part, what you see in this presentation should kind of be how your state or and even your county work with their voter rolls. There's a great way to look at your voter rolls and compare it to the voting population. What does your demography office actually say? Because that's what can hone in on, wow, these people actually exist. The demography data should actually be the people that exist. And we know that in the voter rolls, there's people that don't exist. There's also the UACAVA, the overseas military and non-military. And what we have come to find is the safeguards around how to become a UACAVA non-military are almost non-existent. And then the other thing we're going to look at is the national change of address. How many people are filing mailing address changes out of their county of record? And then the other thing that I also want to talk about, so people will make the comment about, oh, you know, active, these people are all inactive, so we're safe. And we'll go through why that's not the case. So the first thing I want to go through, the voter registration database. How does that information flow? And how does it flow when you're in Eric's state? So what starts with is the state database gets all of their information, and this is Colorado. And again, it may not be exactly like this for your state, but most states are going to flow like this. Each county is responsible for their voter rolls, which then roll up to a central database, which is required by HAVA. The state will then take that information and shoot it off to Eric, who will then send back reports on, hey, here's a bunch of eligible voters that you didn't even know existed. Make sure you go sign them up. Hey, these are all the people that changed their address. And as you're going to find out shortly, it's a pretty crappy report that they apparently give. Hey, here's all the people that died. And by the way, here's all the people that registered in another state. Another report that apparently really sucks based on what I found. So the way that that works is the state sends the voter roll information to Eric. Eric, and in that information, they're sending social security numbers, driver's license numbers, DMV data, so that they can do, you know, the exact match to people across the states and people who have died. Eric then sends those reports back to the state. The state incorporates it and feeds it back through to the counties. The counties are then responsible for taking that information from the state and from Eric to then act on it and remove voters as needed, mark them inactive, make sure they're being updated properly. So after you've taken a view through the voter roll, you start to analyze, okay, what does the voter roll look like historically versus what does my population growth look like? And this is a great indicator on whether or not your voter roll is inflated and how much it's inflated. And what we can see here is that there is a pretty good correlation between the voter roll growth and the voting population growth, at least in my county. However, with that said, what you can see is that there's these big ramp ups right before elections and big ramp downs right after when they clean the rolls. And the point here is to say, why is it that right after the election, we're back to pre-ramp up numbers? How many of the people being included in this pre-ramp up numbers are being cut and culled afterwards to be hidden from people in the state? And in Colorado, every single county I've analyzed, every single one follows this exact same pattern, no matter what their voting population growth is. And in fact, we had one county, the voting population was negative, and they still had this kind of voter roll growth. The other thing in Colorado that's unique to Colorado and only a few other states is what's known as automatic voter registration. So you go to the DMV, hey, you're automatically a voter, or you go and talk to the Department of Revenue about something. It may not even be, you actually do anything. Oh, you talk to them, you're a voter. So then we have these people that may not even live here but had some interaction, they get added to the rolls. The next thing that you can take a look at is actually compare your state's demography office data to your voter roll data. And what's great here is you can break it down into census age brackets, because people from the demography office will really understand this. You can break down your voter roll as long as you have age, which you should have at least the birth year so you can get an estimated age. Some states have the full date of birth so you can get the exact age. Either way, you can then group those into census age brackets and actually compare it to your demography office. Now, what's important here is the demography office, that's when they go and find the real people, right? The voter roll part can have a bunch of those phantoms. So when you do this comparison, you can immediately find suspect areas in your voter rolls. And in this case, what we can see is we actually have a surplus of voters compared to the voting population for the ages 25 to 40. This would be an area you'd want to investigate. Also, if you look at the red line here, what I did was I said, okay, here's all the ballots that were actually counted according to our Secretary of State. So not only am I now looking at who's on the voter rolls, you can additionally add the line of who returned a ballot by age group. And what you can start to see is unfathomable, abnormally high turnout rates, right? These many people are returning ballots. I mean, look at this. You're saying your entire population, 70 plus, basically returned ballots. Doesn't make sense. You start to get these graphics available to people and they'll start to understand the problem that the voter rolls have. And the other piece here that's actually important, and I brought this up to several county clerks, and in Colorado, those are the people that run our elections. Well, I guess our Secretary of State, who's a tyrant now, runs the elections, but the clerks supposedly had autonomy. I would bring this to them and say, not only are the voter rolls bad, but if the voter rolls are not bad, like you say, then you are getting screwed out of grants and loans, because the demography office also, for population-based reimbursements to the counties, determine the eligible population for those reimbursements. And so I've had a couple clerks who thought I was just going to take an exact election integrity approach, which I did, but then I told them, you're getting screwed on your grants. And a couple of them took that part very seriously. So it was actually a way in to the election integrity because I took it from a non-election integrity consequence. So the next thing that everybody should be familiar with on their voter rolls are UACAVA voters. And UACAVA is the Uniformed Overseas something Act. I always forget what it's called, but it's your uniformed and non-uniformed overseas voters. But when I looked at this for Colorado, and specifically for the county I live in, this is unbelievable. So there's two things I want to note here. There was substantial military and non-military growth right after 2016, right after Trump's elected. All of a sudden, these UACAVAs just explode. But then they go and there's something here that they changed, and they, again, almost went back to pre-election levels, just like we saw with the voter roll growth. Now, in Colorado, we're looking at a growth rate here of almost doubling by the 2020 election. This high point was the 2020 election. We didn't have this many people move overseas and military in 6 months to create this kind of slush fund. Does it make sense is the first question you should ask. And that's where you go back and you look at your population growth and you say, well, the population growth, we had a good 5-6%, but then you're saying, well, but my UACAVAs went up by 200%. That doesn't make sense. Those are the types of questions you can start to ask yourself as you analyze this data. The other thing that I've noted to people is the high correlation. If you look, a correlation tells you how much in unison do two variables move. In this case, if we're adding a military, how often are we also adding a non-military? And as you can see here, a correlation of 97% tells you that it's almost a one-for-one. Whenever a military is added, we're adding a non-military person. How many active military people are taking non-military people with them at a one-to-one ratio? Something's not right. And in my perspective, there's a potential cloning of military members, because it's actually kind of hard to become a military UACAVA. It is not hard to become an overseas UACAVA voter. And in that way, I believe that they may actually be cloning. So the next piece that I looked at is, well, our voter rolls say this many people live here, but how many have actually moved and it's never been updated? So the first thing I like to do is say, well, how many have stayed within the state but moved out of the county? And if you think about it, this is a big deal because when you go and you vote in elections, a lot of those issues and candidates are county-based. So when you've got people sitting on your voter rolls that live in other counties and are impacting your county that you're actually paying taxes in and living in, that's a problem. So in my county alone, I found over 8,400 people that had filed the permanent changes of address out of Arapaho. So what does that mean to file a permanent change of address? When anybody goes to a post office because they say, I'm moving, they fill out a slip. On that slip, they put, okay, this is temporary, I'm just going to be gone for a few months and I come back. Or they say, this is permanent, I'm not going to be getting my mail from this location any longer. The one we focus on is the permanent, because the temporary could be snowbirds. There could be a lot of people that aren't physically moving. Physically moving their residence. They're only moving temporarily. And that is a key distinction. So when you are running NCOA data, you need to run it through a full service provider who gives you only permanent changes of address. Because if you cannot differentiate between temporary and permanent, your entire data pool is irrelevant. So in my county, the 8,400 that moved were still on our rolls when the election came around. So the key point here is, hey, if you're changing your mailing address out of county, unless you permanently expect to check your mail in the next county every day and go drive to that county every day to get your mail, I think we can assume you meant to move your residence as well. The other key part that I wanted to look at is who doesn't even live in our state? And this was a big eye-opener. This in my county alone, almost 27,000 people that we found had filed permanent changes of address out of the state. They're still on our rolls come election time. Same concept, if you're filing a permanent change out of state, and unless you're going to drive past state lines every morning with your coffee to get your mail, you probably moved your residence. So the 35,000 people that moved out of my county, either to another county within the state or out of state, is almost 8% of our voter rolls. Now, 8% may sound small, but think about that number. Any race and issue that was won by 35,000 or less is immediately in question, because you now have the list of voters that shouldn't even be there. Then that tells you there is an issue with the list of voters. So what does that also include? That also includes people who may not even exist. And one thing that I don't have here that was very interesting in Colorado, we found multiple examples of people whose first name was Thursday, middle name was Wednesday, last name was Friday. So their names were just the days of the week or the abbreviations of the days of the week. So you can start to very clearly say these are not accurate. With the NCOA, you can zero in on those voters that are not accurately on the rolls. The other piece that's a subset of this are, now that we know they moved, did they register to another state? And in my county, there were over 6,500 people registered in another state and in my county, still on the voter rolls in time for the 2020 general election in both states. So clerks will tell you a lot, though. Well, they're NCOA. We marked them inactive. Case solved, right? They can just sit there inactive. Done. Well, you know what? That's not exactly true, because the wonders of the internet have given us the ability to go and make changes online. And to go and change your status in Colorado is very, very simple. You go to the Secretary of State's page and you fill out a couple pieces of information and boom, you can go from active to inactive. But then the clerk was like, yeah, but there's so many checks and balances to be reactivated online. You have to know so much information about a person to be able to do that. It is already out there. I've got two examples here, Equifax and Capital One. These breaches included social security numbers. And these are just two of the biggest ones recently. I just got notification of another one because I have a notification alert for any time there's a breach. This information is all out there. They have all this information. So now that they have this, if they need to go activate 1,000 people for a race or for an issue, they've got it. Just these two alone are going to affect almost 300 million people. Now you say, well, wait a sec. The data that's in there, can that be used to go reactivate my voter registration? Absolutely. They got names, addresses, birth dates, social security numbers. And you don't even need the full social. You just need the last four. You could do a random number generator to get that last four, because I can guarantee that on our Secretary of State's website, there is no CAPTCHA, which is a security form to keep from web crawlers and bots consistently trying to do exactly this. Let's do a four-number combination until we get a hit. And as Rick Weibel has shown through some audits of the websites from the Secretary of State, there are zero security standards that they are implementing to protect from that. So then, now that we know this can happen, has it happened? Hell yeah, it has. And look at in 2020, 15% of the people that were inactive became active just in time for the election. And then another 5% the following year, and another 7% last year. And this becomes a cumulative pool that they're reactivating. And when they reactivate, what happens? If you have universal mail-in or you have absentee, they get absentee ballots or they get mail-in ballots. The percent, and the thing is, if you think about what it takes to become inactive, like you guys know, you guys have talked to clerks, they don't even want to mess with it. So if they're making it inactive, there's usually, they've gone through every step. The voter doesn't live there. We got undeliverable mail. They even told us, you know, that they may have moved. We just don't know where. So a clerk will go mark them inactive. So then why are they going back and reactivating that if they don't live there? Why are they reactivating? So quick recap, right? In my county, major insertions of voters right in the run-up of every election, a major deletion, which takes you right back to the pre-run-up levels. So then the natural question is, how many of those voters are the ones that are getting removed? Does the UOCAVA growth make any sense? If you think about your voting population, how many people do you know are going and moving overseas? For me, there's not a lot. And you can go find that information on your demography website about people overseas. They'll actually track that. The other thing is, 35,000 people in my county don't even live in my county, according to the NCOA data, as long as you assume they don't want to drive out of state or out of county to go and get their mail. And then that 35% is, or sorry, that 35,000 is 8% of my total voter roll. That's just the ones we can absolutely say for sure, because we have the evidence that they shouldn't even be on there. That doesn't include the Monday, Thursday, Friday ones that people put in there. And then the inactive to active voters, you know, clerks will try to tell you that system is secure, that system is safe. And anybody that's talked to Colonel Smith for more than 5 minutes immediately knows that's impossible and it's not right. And that's where I'm going to end, Amy. And I'll go ahead and open it up for questions.
Okay, awesome. Thanks, Jeff. So I want to address first to let everyone know, I upload, there's a PDF version of that presentation now in the library, and I posted the link in the chat, and I wrote myself a note, so I'll include that link when I send out the notification that the recordings and everything are ready from today's call. So we have some questions in the chat, and of course, you guys feel free to raise your hand if you want to ask Jeff a question. Question that Edie has had since the last roundtable, and Sean's like, that would be a great question for Jeff. So I'm going to read that to you now. I don't think Edie's on, but I know she'll catch the recording. She's almost always on these calls. All right, here's what she says. I've been thinking about the whole concept of phantom voters, those for whom votes are cast, but they didn't actually vote, and how inflated voter rolls fits into the picture. I have questions on how to identify those votes and actions other states have taken once they're identified. I would also like to better understand how voter rolls are inflated. I think she means like how do they get inflated, and whether inflated rolls have a purpose other than becoming a repository of phantom voters. I think it would be helpful to have a discussion about them.
Yeah, so there's probably about three different points there I want to address. The first point is, how do you find them? There's many different ways that you can find them. You know, a couple ways that I showed on the presentation through NCOA data. You can get the list and take it to people and say, look, they don't live here anymore, and we have the evidence. That's the first way. Second way is to analyze the voter rolls. And there's great tools out there like Matt's EDA tool, the Election Data Analyzer tool, where you can go and start to see some of the funky names and the people that live at residential addresses. There's like 20 people that live at a small family home that voted. You go to that house and all of a sudden they're like, I don't know who these people are. And I'm going to give you a great example of that one. In Wyoming, I gave a query where we looked at people where there was 3 to 15 people live there and at least 3 of them voted. So what it did is it helped to draw down that pool to look at single family homes. And one of the canvassers, the first thing she did with that report is go look at her address. There were 2 people who voted from her address. She lived in that house for 20, 30 years. Those are examples of queries that you can run on your own voter rolls. We also have a list of queries that we've been tracking. And at any point, Amy, we need to get that in the library, and I'll work with you on that. But it'll be really good for you guys to see the different queries you can run on your own as well. The second piece is, what is the purpose of the voter rolls inflating? Well, one obviously is to win elections. So the thing here about consultants is when they say we're going to get out the vote to candidates, they really mean we're going to get out the ballots. And so they can get out those ballots with those voter rolls. And how do people get on there? Rock the vote, voter registration, cybersecurity. Now I'm trying to think of the word here. I'm sorry. Basically, they can also add them electronically. These machines, you got to remember, these machines were, and these databases were built in the mid 2000s. At this point, we have AI technology that could easily insert rows without them even knowing. The other way is the Rock the Vote stuff. They go, they love homeless camps. They love universities, because they can go and sign all these people up, and then they will stay on the rolls forever. Even after 10 years after they've graduated college and they don't live in the state, they are still on the rolls. And that's another way that they can inflate those rolls. The other reason why they want to do this, because there is talk now that the census, the U.S. Census Department, is going to start looking at voter rolls to make their census estimates to try and save money. So if you have an already inflated voter roll, you're going to get a much better representation in Congress. There is a negative consequence directly to all the other states that will be disenfranchised by that in that manner. And Amy, what was the third one that you had?
Sorry, I'm just cracking up over the government in an effort to save money. Because we're sending these
checks that's what they tell you. Yeah. In an effort to have more money to fund Ukraine, I should say.
Yeah. Suddenly, we want to save money. Okay. Before I go back.
Amy, I don't know if it's me, but you're kind of breaking in and out. I don't know if that's happening for everybody else, but it's breaking in and out, and I'm having a hard time hearing you.
Yeah, she's breaking up here too, Jeff.
Okay.
It's probably my connection, because my husband's working from home today, so there's more people on the internet than usual. Sorry about that,
guys. Send them to the coffee shop.
Right? Yeah. Jeff, you mentioned the election data analyzer, and you said, like, you kind of referred people to that. I was going to post a link in the chat. However, all I can find on that is a Substack. That's the Election Data Analyzer newsletter.
On the Cause of America site, Amy, there is Matt has incorporated an EDA
under links
section in there. We can get you the links there. Let me I'll pull it up here. And then while we're pulling it up, so the EDA is one way. Another way are the reports that I create, and I've created them for several states now. And I'm going to show you one of those real quick, and I'll show you the one for Colorado in particular that backs up the data that we just talked about. And on that report that I can give you guys, it's an interactive report, and it's meant to take it to volunteers and drill down into their neighborhoods, take it to election officials, drill down into their neighborhoods and show them all these people that don't live there. And a lot of them will be like, no, I know that house. Yeah, they moved 10 years ago. And all of a sudden you start to have a much different conversation. I'm going to pull that open real quick and 1 second here. Okay, let me share my screen one more time here, Amy.
Okay.
So this other report that we can help you guys work on, so this is an HTML-based report. It'll open up in your browser. When you open it up, you'll get some information about the voter rolls through NCOA. You'll also get a table that you could search. So for instance, I live in Arapahoe County. So I could narrow this down to just Arapahoe and see the 26,000 people that moved out of state. I can look in the city that I live in. I can look in another city. I can even drill down into people that voted. All of this information is available. This is data right before the election, so it actually would have been like this. I must have it in a different format, but you can go down and show people. Yeah, so I have it in a different format. So you can go down and show people, hey, and not only did this person vote, they also moved before the vote date. Or the one that I like, that I'm really fond of, is the map. And this is where you can say, hey, where do you live? Okay, let's go take a quick gander. Take a quick look at your neighborhood. Hey, do you know these guys over here? Oh, you do? Yeah, they don't live here anymore. See? And you can get all their voter information and give that to the election official, or you can even confirm with the person sitting there, like, oh yeah, I know Stephanie. Yeah, she moved a while ago. And I found these reports to be really helpful in getting people really interested and being able to really dig into their own local area. Now, those are two examples of the reports that are available that we can offer and that EDA Matt can offer.
Okay, awesome. Thanks, Jeff. I'm going to leave my video off since it seems like it's my connection that's bad. But the good news is this doesn't record through my connection. It records through Teams. So the recording is usually really clean. Laura from South Carolina did ask in the chat, what population data are you using? Census, how adjusting?
Yes, a good question. So Colorado actually has their own census office that they are able to do their own estimates at the county level population. So this isn't the overall U.S. census. This is the one that I'm using, and a lot of states have it. Some states bury it, but the ones I'm using are state specific. The state crafted these based on their canvassing efforts in their states and counties. So this is very state specific. It's been adjusted for Colorado. It's been adjusted for Arapahoe County based on the people that actually live there.
Okay, great. Excuse me. And then Doug says, interesting that the driver's license system does not have these types of holes in it nationwide. We all know that motor voter is a large source of voter registration. Maybe we can tie the clerk and recorders into the DMV.
So in Colorado, they're supposed to be tied into the DMV. They're supposed to be doing these. They're supposed to be catching these. What I'm finding out is that they're really beholden to Eric now just telling them. Like, they don't believe it unless Eric tells them. Eric, the Electronic Registration Information Center. They won't act on it unless they get a report from Eric. Even though I can give them the names of the voters, they could go to their houses and confirm they don't live there. They're going to look at it and go, well, Eric didn't tell me. So it's almost, it doesn't matter if they've incorporated, because in Colorado they have incorporated the DMV. The clerks have direct access to it in Colorado. Doesn't matter. Doesn't seem to matter, because we still got people that are listed at addresses we know they don't live at, even out of state. And then we also know the other report that Eric is supposed to give are the people that registered in more than one state. I just showed a list of 6,500 in my own county that are registered in other states and still registered in my county leading up to the election.
All right. Yeah, so Cheryl's asking for the link for the election data analyzer tool. Cheryl, I'll include that in the follow-up email along with the link to Jeff's presentation. All right, and I think we have some hands up as well. So Laura in South Carolina, go ahead.
Yes, hi, thanks. The one thing that we tend to bump up against is the whole issue of the National Voter Registration Act of 1993-94. And our state law says that we need to clean those rolls 90 days prior to election. They're supposed to be frozen 30 days prior. And essentially anyone who moved, except for maybe within precinct, after 30 days should be a questionable voter. But what happens is when we even challenge the voters and we go into the county offices and say, here's the phantom voters, here's the dead voters, we have their obituaries, we have the people, we knocked on their doors, we found that they haven't lived there in 5 years. They don't remove them from the rolls because they do the NVRA thing where they send the two postcards and they have to wait. And even then, if they get them returned, I think they have to wait for two election cycles. My son was on, he moved to Atlanta from South Carolina. He was on the rolls for 6 years. And of course he did a national change of, you know, he did a change of address form. So this is what we're running into, is this complete resistance to any kind of removal. Like you say, they make them inactive, even though our state law says remove and delete those specific words. And I was looking at the NVRA this weekend and it said, also it said remove. Now, I guess they're calling remove, make inactive, but I'm sorry, if I'm dead, I'm not going to become active again. So this is the problem, is there's stubborn resistance to the NVRA and not taking those people off the rolls. They refuse. They bring lawyers when we try to challenge it. It is ridiculous.
Yeah, and the NVRA, like you said, there's an entire section in the NVRA that demands removal of voters.
Yep.
So it's like they're picking and choosing what they want to adhere to. And unfortunately, that is going to require, because a lot of county attorneys have no testicular fortitude, that they'll just bend to the will of the state. And usually what you'll find is the state is the one pushing the counties to basically be mockingbirds and just parrot whatever they say. And that is tough. But the more you present and the more you show, you get more citizens that then start to push back. And what we started to see, Laura, even though some of these elected officials are, you know, starting to clamp up and not deliver, what's happening now is more citizens are getting involved and actually removing these clerks via either recalls or elections. And we've actually starting to see this across multiple states where they're getting America First Patriots in there that are going to start to actually make the changes and challenge the status quo. So even if at a legal perspective, they're pushing back, we still have the numbers as patriots.
We have, ours are appointed by the legislators. So we're highly centralized. So it just makes it so nasty. But one thing I wanted to give a tip to people, we FOIA'd the communications between our election commission. We don't have a secretary of state. Our election commission and Eric. And what was interesting, we found Eric actually was coming up with a lot of instances where they should have cleaned these people up. And they just aren't doing it. They're just not doing it. They're not following guidance from Eric.
Yeah, Laura, I'll give you an example of one here in Colorado that came to my attention not too long ago. So there's a gentleman by the name of Totes Legit, and some of you may have worked with him. He's been doing analyzing double state voters, people that voted in two states in the election. And he has correspondence with Judd Choate, who is the Colorado head of elections for the Secretary of State's office in Colorado. And in those communications, Judd Choate basically says two things. One, I don't know who you are, so I'm not gonna listen to what you're giving me. And two, Eric gives us reports of people that voted in more than one state. And if that comes up on that report, then we'll look at it. So two things come out of that. One, Eric knows this is happening because they have reports. Most people don't even know that this is an active report. I didn't. I didn't know they were actively reporting it, even though I was finding it all over the place. And the other thing is that it's the problem with centralization. Because Eric is centralized and states are just now relying on Eric and not even challenging Eric. They're not doing anything. And this is the problem with centralization, is then people become reliant on the centralized power.
Jeff, how do we know Eric's reporting it? Just because Judge Choate says it is, but how do we know it's actually like that? How do we know that what you're finding in the like granular line by line is actually what someone somewhere is being told by Eric through its reports?
Well, unfortunately in Colorado, because our Secretary of State shuts down, like literally illegally shuts down FOIAs, I have to go by that email that I was a part of that basically had that exchange between Judge Choate and Totes Legit. But otherwise, you should try FOIA. you should do a Freedom of Information request to your elections office.
It's not like Judd replied and said, see, here's a report from Eric and it's not on there. So, and if we can't FOIA Eric reports or score, you know, whatever, through Colorado, then we don't know, frankly, which is just another example of lack of transparency.
Yeah, you're right. We don't know. But there's, so Amy alluded to this, there's going to be some fun information coming about Eric. And Amy, in addition to that, that you already know, there's some more fun information we're going to be researching about the potentials to FOIA Eric directly.
Nice. Okay. So George had said earlier, I think when you were sharing your screen, when you were doing that drill down tool, he said it's three counties, but not Arapahoe. Jeff has a lot of counties in that tool. So, but that's what they have to request from you, right? Is that the NCOA request that's on the COA website? Okay. So guys, yes. I'll include the link, but I'll also tell you right now where that is if you want to get that. When you log into your Cause of America account and go to your dashboard, it's actually currently the very first post under the national posts in your Cause of America dashboard. So, and it says National Change of Address NCOA request form. So when you click on that, it takes you through the process and what you need to do in order to be able to get that. Okay. And, oh, so here's a question from Don Ambroser. He says, I'm from Tennessee. We are finding potentially 10% phantom and 9% lost voters. That's a lot of votes. If this is being used to change votes, et cetera, then who do you think is changing the data?
Probably a combination of somebody in their elections office or a cyber intrusion, trying to make sure that the books go back to balance. Because they probably didn't immediately balance after the election. And now they're going, they can go back in. So the thing with a lot of these registration databases, and we're finding out through various states' FOIAs, that they're giving direct access to groups. Groups are able to go in and get direct access to these registration, this registration data. These are the same databases that also tell you the history, the voting history of these people. The same database. Same built at the same time with the same vulnerabilities. And if you give somebody what's known as API access and you give them admin access, or they figure out the admin credentials, because we find a lot of state officials that use the password admin and the username admin, and they get API access that way, you can do insert, delete, modify. Those three functions can completely change your voter roll. And it's not that hard if you have that API access.
Well, and Doug had a good point, too. He said, Doug Montana said, legislation is required to mandate reliance on DMV data and ban Eric. Imagine if law enforcement had to rely on Eric for their, quote, current information.
I don't want to think about it. That would be Orwellian in nature. You know, Eric, for those that may not know, the original seed money for Eric came from the Pew Charitable Trust. And Pew Charitable Trust has arms back to Open Society Foundation and George Soros. So David Becker likes to tout Eric as, you have to have it. You just have to. Think about all the work you have to do as a clerk. But here's the thing. In Colorado, we had Kansas CrossCheck before Eric. Kansas CrossCheck, it was based out of Kansas. It was a database that the Kansas group, the Kansas group of legislators, along with other legislators in additional states, came up with, and they worked directly with each other to keep their voter rolls clean. In Colorado, we had Kansas CrossCheck. Kansas CrossCheck got in legal trouble by the ACLU, one for a data breach, but two, guess what? Oh, the removals are racist. Removal of the voters is racist by Kansas CrossCheck. So we have to have a different system. In comes Eric, David Becker, funds that trace back to George Soros, comes in. Now, in Colorado, we had this overlap period when we had both Eric as a start and still Kansas CrossCheck before the ACLU got it shut down. Our voter rolls were really held down. Kansas CrossCheck goes away. here's our voter rolls now. Now, Eric, there are so many problems with Eric. I don't even know where to begin. We'd need coffee and probably some drinks to go through everything that I have a problem with Eric about.
So Laura in South Carolina is saying our law enforcement refused to address cross-state voters as it was, quote, federal.
No, they have, they still violated the state law, but if they go look at the state law, it's a crime too. So they could probably go after that. So yes, there is the federal, but there's also the, I bet there's a state statute, and you may want to check your state statute to see if there is something about an illegal vote. And it, an illegal vote may have its own definition. So that may be something you want to check on to at least get your state level officials engaged and involved. And if anything, they should at least be submitting a report to the worthless FBI.
All right. And Jeff, excuse me, John says, is there a network of data analysts that can help us?
Yes. So there's a couple things. Through Clouds of America, we've been trying to get different people connected. Right now we have kind of a loose Telegram group that we're putting data people into to talk through things like this. We're also working on a national data strategy group that's going to help to set the course of the databases, and also what are all the queries we can run, or, hey, I need some help running this. Can somebody from another state run this? These are all the things we are working on currently. But there is a Telegram group, and I will put that in the chat. Actually, Amy, I may put that in the notes afterwards so I don't have to go fumble through my Telegram live.
Yeah. Well, and also, I'm not sure everybody here wants or needs to be a part of that. But I think probably what makes the most sense for John, and I saw somebody else gave it a thumbs up, so I think there's something more than one person is interested in, is if you need data analyst help, I think the best thing to do is to send an email to info@causeofamerica.org. And that way we can either connect you with Jeff, or Jeff can connect you with somebody, or connect you with that group, et cetera. But we'll be best able to serve you if you can email info@causeofamerica.org. A request being made for a county level. Do you need active or inactive or both lists?
You would want both, because the one thing you want to check on is how long ago did they move before they made them inactive? Because it could be that they moved a long time ago and they just barely made them inactive. And in that instance, you may have a violation of your state law and you may have a violation of NVRA. So you would actually want to look at both. And yes, we can do it at just a county basis. We can also do it at the state level.
All right, cool. So any other questions for David Jeff?
Yes, I just want to make a quick one here, Amy, if it's okay.
Yeah, go ahead, Rick.
Yeah, just real quick. You know, we've talked about this for months now, about these bad voter records and everything else that's been happening, people moving NCOA. And my hats are off to you, Jeff, for the report you put together, as well as Russ for providing the NCOA data. That's great stuff. You know, I can hear some frustration of some of the folks in the group here about, you know, we bring this information to the BOEs and they're not doing anything about it. We hear this throughout all the states and that kind of thing. And, you know, once we get our national database up and running and we can actually start using that thing to actually see what's really going on between the two states, the idea of packaging that data and then presenting it to the legislature to show them this is how bad this stuff is, I would just absolutely love to see a national effort or class action suit, if you would, against all these BOEs that are doing this stuff. So I think from a technical perspective, while we can go down in the trenches here and dig all this stuff out and get the boots on the ground and check out these addresses and all that stuff, I think once we get this database up and we get all these states together, we'll be able to do that kind of stuff. And I really didn't want to, you know, come in here and start talking about the national database per se, but for those of you who are out there feeling frustrated about this, there are major things going on that are going to help this situation. And Jeff, I wasn't sure if you want to comment on that at all about, you know, where do you think we're seeing that going from the national perspective?
I'd like Sean to actually comment on, you know, you talked about kind of a class action sort of lawsuit, some sort of action based on all of this. Sean, can you talk about what you're doing from a legal perspective?
Yeah, I was going to suggest that too, and Sean put his hand up at the same time. So take it away,
Great
Sean.
Great minds think alike.
Yeah, I think the right target for the lawsuit, and we were talking to the lawyer teams about it. You all have probably heard, you know what Mike wants to stand up and what they're currently working on trying to frame out. We want to bring in some of the other legal teams and counsel that have been operating independently, as well as some of the legal institutions that have been recruiting and soliciting funds on the predicate that they're going to do something. They're doing a great job of raising funds. That's all I have to say about that. The proper target for the inaccuracies is probably the secretaries of state and the federal government, or the secretaries of state on behalf of the federal government, QTAM, the way that Singer went after Hart in the Singer v. Hart case, Hart InterCivic. And the reason is because the federal law requires that the voter databases, the centralized statewide voter registration databases, be the single authoritative source. So right there, they made it impossible for a local official to maintain a separate authoritative source by law. And then they require that those databases be accurate and secure, and they are neither accurate nor secure. So the federal government is complicit and culpable because it required that, drove that, funded that through grant programs in which these public officials have been lying repeatedly, which is a misrepresentation, a fraudulent representation, resulting in the expenditure of public funds. So there's a case there in that basis, but there's also that the secretaries of state are required to maintain them that way, and there's been no enforcement mechanism. So if we go after the secretaries of state themselves on the basis of that federal law and the misrepresentation for the funds, then there are personal liabilities for the secretaries of states that swore under certification that their systems were secure and accurate. There's a potential for the federal government to become a plaintiff alongside, or a quiet plaintiff alongside. So right now our thinking is that is the most likely, most beneficial approach, because it can bridge from the civil into the criminal as well. And then through the process of investigation, we can find out, okay, who has been pumping these voter rolls. And we have a pretty good idea now, but I don't think we have even, you know, a sliver of the full picture. Part of the reason I think that is because we keep seeing these same nonprofits like League of Women Voters, NAACP, the League of Latino organizations, including Mi Familia Vota, go after anybody who tries to do canvassing, right? They made all the threats. DOJ participated in those threats in Arizona. We've seen the same thing in Georgia. We think that they're going after them because they are culpable in the inflation of the voter registration systems with either non-voters, duplicate voters, or people who are not eligible.
Mm-hmm. Well, thanks, Sean. That's exactly where we're going with this. That we seem like we're up against this mountain of money and black money and everybody that's doing this stuff. So it's encouraging to hear that, you know, Mike is going down that road from a national perspective to try to see if we can put some sort of a class action suit together to get this fixed. But, you know, it's tough for the grassroots folks on the ground to go fight this stuff without that kind of backing. So I'm glad to hear that. Thank you.
One of our greatest obstacles has been the unwillingness of the GOP nationally and yeah. in the states to yeah. go look for the information and to press to test when they see and receive information about, you know, what may be fraud or what is definitely inaccuracy, what may be fraud. So, you know, we're going to bulldoze through that.
Good. Thank you.
Thanks, Rick. Sean or Jeff or both, Laura in South Carolina in the chat just said all voter rolls should be online, free access to the citizens. Do you guys care to comment on that?
It's public information. They shouldn't be charging people $35,000. They should be charging you nothing. And 100% agree with that. And one of the things we're talking about, you know, the managing and the administration of the voter rolls really needs to be a bifurcated process. And it needs to be break apart, Eric, put the states back in charge, let the states work with each other. You should not have non-governmental organizations telling states who and who is not on their rolls. Technically, that makes them an agency of the state, but we'll figure that out. The other part is that citizen check and Laura, that should be part of the requirement, is that here, citizens, you can go check it as well and make sure that you're holding your account, your officials accountable. And that's kind of what we're hoping to address with the national database. And Rick, who's just on, is one of the volunteers helping us to get that up and going.
Awesome. All right, John Ambroser has a question. Go ahead, John.
Yeah. Hey, thanks. Appreciate being on the call from Tennessee here. And one thing I've noticed, you know, there's so many issues. Like, they're just, it goes on forever, it seems like, in so many different facets. And maybe y'all know about this, but it almost seems like, and the previous guy was talking about it, like a contract with America. There needs to be a simplified way nationally that everybody statewide can just grab it and go. And I do see we're working with our legislature too. It just, there's so many rabbit holes that we're all chasing down, and I just want to hear from y'all. Do y'all see that consolidating a little bit and kind of a force across America, so we don't go down too many rabbit holes?
And I think Sean kind of talked about the effort underway to try and coalesce a lot of that into a legal realm. Right. And from a data realm, we're trying to do the same thing. And that's part of this national data strategy group that we have, is trying to help do the same thing, where we're trying to get people on the same page and try to help focus where that ROI is the highest, the return on investment is the highest. And a lot of that just comes from conversations, talking with each other too. Do not underestimate making a phone call to somebody and just talking to them. And I think there's a lot more of that could happen, where we could try to communicate more efficiently. That's another thing we are looking into as well.
Okay, thank you.
Awesome. Okay, any other questions for Data Jeff? Like, people are like, okay, lots of process, lots of action to take. All right, Doug in Montana. Go ahead, Doug.
First of all, thank you. Very informative and a little bit frustrating, because currently our legislature is in session and they have a special standing committee on election security, and they are meeting twice a week. The meeting last night was almost 4 hours, and they hosted executives from ESNS, and it would be amazing to have this level of information to be able to be presented in that type of a setting, because ultimately, constitutionally, maybe exceptions in some states, but constitutionally in Montana, it is up to the legislature how things are done. And with one of the legislators that I talked to about the meeting last night, was their level of ignorance about ESNS did not allow them to know whether they were being told the truth or not. And the same mentality or the same situation can be applied to the voter rolls. And I've been working on this pretty much as a one-man army in Northwest Montana for over 2 years. And it is very obvious, and you know, ties into what the gentleman that just spoke said. I see it as two separate fronts. We have the voter roll issue, which is the source of the fraud. And then we have the machine manipulation, which is the output from the source. So I see that as two fronts, but they're inseparable. One can't work without the other. So I just wish we had the ability to have this level of presentation done in a legislative setting. So if we can start working towards that, I think we can start to eliminate some of those rabbit holes and focus our energy on things that will produce immediate results. Because honestly, we're running out of time. I don't want to be Brazil. Thank you.
No, I agree. And we do have other contacts in Montana, and we actually may be able to start working on Montana data, at least from the voter roll perspective, and to recreate the report that I showed, that interactive report. We may be able to get to that data and actually have that available for Montana. Amy, let's get Doug's information and see if he's connected with our Montana folks.
Okay, perfect. Will you send me an email after this meeting? And that way I can make sure we get you connected to the right people.
I absolutely will. And I will include a news article that was written about my efforts that gives you a little bit of my background of what I've been able to get done in the last couple of years.
Perfect.
Thank you very much.
Awesome. Okay, anybody else have questions for Data Jeff?
I have one. If you
go
can
ahead, Dawn.
Yeah. Hi, I'm Dawn from Maryland. I was just wondering, is there anything that would be helpful for me to do a FOIA about the ERIC reports in Maryland? Or maybe just ask them what reports and when they get them and what they are, and then start requesting those? Or
I'll give a couple thoughts, Don, and then Sean, if you want to chime in as well. But definitely FOIA, what reports are you actually getting from ERIC, and what is the frequency of those reports, and when was the last time you received those reports? Start there, because each state can actually get different reports. They don't necessarily get the whole slate of reporting that ERIC gives them. They may only choose one or two, or they may have all of it. And so I would start there, and from there you'll start to see what are the names of the reports, and then you can start to FOIA individually on those particular reports.
Okay. So I might start with my local Harper County board, since Maryland's so screwed up with Linda Lamone. She controls everything, but we're kind of getting access in with our local boards. So maybe I'll start with them, see what they get, and then take it to the state level once I get some information from the local, because I have trouble getting, you know, information from the state board sometimes.
And you may, you know, and I don't know that ERIC, depending on the contract that Maryland has with ERIC, you may not get a lot between ERIC and the counties. A lot of times the ERIC communication is ERIC and the Secretary of State's office or the state level elections supervisor. You can certainly try, but you may have actually better luck FOIAing the state officials or the state's offices.
So if you look in the library, the Cause of America library, you'll see that Amy's got a bunch of documents in there about ERIC, including membership, tech and security briefings, bylaws, contractual information, and you can look for the language and terms that they use for the types of reports and summaries that they send and are required to send. So then when you do open records requests to your Secretary of State, yes, counties, but they're probably getting them, as Jeff said, from the Secretary of State. There's usually a single point of contact into the state in the Secretary of State's office. And then they're getting whitewashed name lists, laundered nameless back from ERIC, and then they're giving them to the counties or the boroughs or the parishes or the townships. And those elected officials typically don't know that they're getting something that's been fabricated, polluted, corrupted, laundered, et cetera. So yeah, go to your Secretary of State, do your open records request there, but do it for the terms. And you know, let us know what kind of responses you get, because we'll try to feed that back into, you know, other states in terms of templates. We would be doing this. We got our hands full. So every bit that you guys do, you don't know how much that you do then becomes, like when you do something like where Linda Rance and the team in Missouri have done all this work, or where, you know, Citizens Audit New York has done all this work, you develop approaches, techniques, and things like that, that we can then hand to other states and other grassroots teams so that they become tools for them as well.
Okay. Sounds good, but we don't really do the Secretary of State. Everything goes through the State Board of Elections, and we have that evil lady, Linda Lamone, that was appointed for life. And she's really evil.
Yeah, whoever is the the downside for her is if there's corruption and fraud, she'll be the one with the criminal liabilities. So, but whoever it is that's listed in your state as the, and that may be where you start, is to get copies of the contracts or membership agreement with Eric. And then you know who the office is that's identified of primary responsibility within your state.
Okay, good idea. You guys are awesome. Thank you.
You guys are awesome.
Thanks, Dawn. Marty Morgan says, we need Project Veritas going to work for Eric. Here's how we keep the rolls dirty. All right. Well, yeah, I guess, you know, sure, at some point there'll be some hot man or hot woman who could sucker his money from Eric, right? Since that seems to be their basic MO is the honeypot, right? So,
Amy, there's got to be an election integrity dating app.
All right, so any other questions for Data Jeff? Going once, going twice. Jeff, I don't know if you're if you've been breezing through the chat, but there are a lot of comments in there from people thanking you for your presentation and all of your hard work on this. So, and like we said earlier, we can't share it just yet, but there's more stuff coming out, hopefully this week, but definitely in the next several days. So, stay tuned for that. Thanks for being here. Thanks for being a part of Cause of America. And thank you, Dev, for being here to share your presentation, your knowledge with us, and Colonel Smith as well. Thanks for being here, guys. And we'll see you next time.
Thanks, everyone. Thanks,
everybody.
Yeah, thanks again, Jeff. Appreciate it,
thank
man.
Thank you, Jeff.
And also Sean, of course.